My name is Piotr Pilch, and I'm indeed from Poland. I do study in the United States at a seminary at Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa, and hopefully going in the future back to Poland and be a pastor in Poland. And the present time I'm working in Holden as a rock manager, calling the rocks. Rock manager. Building the walls and so forth with the garden. Maybe we'll organize this meeting that I'll give you. At first I'll give you maybe a very short presentation on Poland, just very brief overview of the history. And then we'll leave open to the question, and I'll be glad to converse with you or give you more information according to your curiosity and could be on the issue of the church or state. And at present time, I'm not sure. I do substitute right now. At any rate, Poland immersed in its 10th century. So it's a pretty long history. I'll not go year by year, so don't be frightened. The reason I mention this date, it's the date of the baptism of our first Duke and later King of Poland, and from that on the country becomes independent unit with a short interruption of 150 years at the very end of the 18th century until the World War I, when Poland was divided and controlled by Prussia, Russia, and Austria. Poland basically do belong to the Western world culturally. By race, we do belong to the Slavs, so we like the same family as Czechs and Slovaks, Yugoslavian nations, Bulgarian and Russians. It's the same linguistic family. Yet because of the influence of the Catholicism in Poland, we did belong always very distinctly to the Latin culture. And because of that, the great writer Dostoevsky hated Poles because of that, because he thought that all Slavs should be of the Orthodox religion. At any rate, Poland actually, up until the Second World War, has some sense of continuity in the culture and belonging to this very Western world. With the Second World War, it's a very dramatic interruption, because for the first time we're going under the influence of the Byzantine culture, which is Russia. Russia, though supposedly denying God at the present time as an official ideology request that, nonetheless, mentally and culturally, traditionally, belongs to the Byzantine culture. You know, the Europe, majority of the Europe, do belong to the Western world, with a few exceptions. Bulgaria, which had been under the Turkey occupation for 500 years, and very closely and influenced by the Byzantine culture through the church, and Russia. The rest of the Europe belonged to the Western world. But with the division of after the Second World War, according to the Yalta Agreement between President Roosevelt and Stalin, the Europe is divided in the center, and the Western part is going to the influence, or remains the same tradition, and the Eastern part, Poland, namely Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and so forth, go to Russia. And for us, it is a very traumatic experience, Because mentally, culturally, we do not understand each other very well. Before Second World War, Poland, as many new nations, like for example, Finland, established fairly democratic government and a basic democratic government with a constitution and parliament and so forth. But in the Second World War, it has been interrupted, and supposedly we still maintain this pluralistic structure and the parliamentary system. Nonetheless, the party's ideology demands a total submission to the government, to the ideology, and the mentality of the government, of the sovereign government, totally uncontrollable, like in the form of the Tsar, which is an import from Russia, has been imposed on us. Till between 45 and 47 is a short period of time where there is some attempts of reconciling the government, which went on exile after Poland has been conquered by the Nazi army, and with the newly elected and supported by the Russian army and brought from Russia to Poland. But obviously it didn't work because it was totally two different traditions, totally different mentality, and totally different concepts. So from roughly 49 until 56, this is the most dark period in our history, as well as in any Eastern European country, as a matter of fact, because it's still the time of Stalin, and many people end up in jails. And as a matter of fact, the Cardinal of Poland, Wyszyński, who died several years just recently, has been imprisoned by this government. After the 56, it's a very dramatic experience in the entire Eastern European community. The Hungary have uprisal. Polish workers are sending to the president of Poland an ox, you know, like for chopping the wood, is a sign that they're getting really nervous. So there was some loosening up of the influence of the ideology and giving more freedom to the people and press and so forth. And that lasts until 68, but gradually disappears again. And the ideology in public and private life becomes again very oppressive. In 68, there's another uprising, but led by students, then 70 by workers, then 76 again by workers, and 70 and 76 is basically because of food prices has been raised very rapidly up, and the workers very unhappy about that, and the consumption of meat rapidly was going down at the time. As a result of this uprisal in 1776, the new movement emerged, actually starting probably with the year 70, which almost all of you know about the Solidarity and Lech Wałęsa. It has a pretty long history, almost a decade, but only in the 80s they were finally able to organize themselves and come up with a series of strikes and demands and finally be recognized. And actually the year 80 was again extremely, extremely dramatic experience, because for the first time workers, though not denying the supremacy of the Russia and supposedly not fighting against socialism, by the very fact that the workers in the socialistic country were willing to and wanting to organize themselves into independent trade unions, question in the most vivid way the unofficial ideology. The movement has been legalized for a short period of time, but then, as you know, we had the martial law for a year or so, and now the government is trying bring back or restore the ancient regime, but I don't think it will happen in the same manner. I mean, that they will be able to return to the same position. As a result, the party had about 2 million members. It dropped down below 1.5 because many of the members, particularly from the lower ranks, were very dissatisfied with the situation in the late 70s and early 80s and finally left the party. So you can see from the numbers that the that the party is not very powerful. Nonetheless, because it controls educational system, mass media, army, police, most of the economy, they're in a position of incredible power, and on top of it, they are supported by the system in Russia. So you have a very strange situation. You have roughly saying 1.5 million members of the Communist Party, and you have 33.5 million of people who are not members of the party. Most of them do belong to the Catholic Church. I would estimate about 98%. And as a matter of fact, many people from the many members of the Communist Party do attend the church. It's not required openly that they would deny or would not go and worship or not attend the church. It is kind of expected that once you get higher, you don't do it. But people still do it secretly, living kind of a world of schizophrenia. So you have 98% of Catholics, and then it's very teeny small groups of the Protestant Church, of which I'm a member. I'm a member of the Lutheran Church, and Lutheran Church has 70,000, Presbyterian has 10,000, Baptist is roughly 2,000 or 3,000, and several other small very group. Those small Lutheran and Presbyterian and Baptist and so forth, they are in a very difficult position because they are kind of squeezed between the Catholics and the state. State is trying to manipulate and use the Protestant churches to balance the power of the Catholic Church. Obviously, this is almost impossible because we're talking about 90% or 98% of the Catholics and a small, teeny group, not more than 100,000 people. There is not, we don't have too big chance even with the support of the government. There's a very interesting situation between the Catholic Church and the state. Catholic Church, as a matter of fact, is not even till today legalized because it is such a powerful institution, it doesn't have to acquire any institution in Poland has to be legalized, be it a church or a social organization or any organization has to be formally legalized. However, they are in a position of the incredible power. They, you know, if the Cardinal of Poland sends a letter, pastoral letter, majority of the nation will hear the same message on a given Sunday. So Catholic Church could indeed bring some problems to the government, and is traditionally has been a political power trying to neutralize the appetite of the government to cool down the expansion of ideology. For example, in schooling, how far the church can demand of people not being educated or exposed to the religion and so forth. To give you just a brief picture, in Germany or Czechoslovakia, to go through the confirmation means that the one makes a decision not going to high school or gymnasium as a preparatory school for the higher education. In other words, the person would remain on the level of the worker. So in anybody wants to chooses different career, has to make a decision between church and his or her life. In Poland, we've never been put before that decision. We never had to make such a drastic decisions. And the church has a relative freedom. The Catholic Church has the rights to present the to put on air the Mass every Sunday. There are two or three publishing houses publishing books and newspapers. Of course, all of them are censored. Nonetheless, they do have some independence. Several seminaries and so forth. Protestant churches, again, are in a little bit difficult situation because the low number and some hostility, the Protestant churches are recognized as not necessarily full Poles. I mean, to be a Lutheran actually in Poland in many places means that the person is not Pole. I grew up with mentality of not being a Pole, though I'm fully by blood Slav and Pole, but because of the religion, I was not allowed. I mean, I didn't have a basis because I was not a Catholic. So it is both mentally and economically difficult, though again, those churches do have full rights and freedom to worship and so forth. There is one but: neither Catholic nor Protestant churches are allowed to make any public, political, or social statements. It's clearly understood by both sides that for that mission, only church and only higher dignitaries are appointed to make any commentaries about the current issue or whatever. Yeah, okay.
Does that include for the pulpit? Yeah. Is that a public place or is that...
Oh yes, pulpit is a public place, yeah. Though, as I understand, because I left Poland in summer 80, I didn't went through this period of reprisal, upheaval or whatever, ferment in Poland. There were many priests, Catholic priests, who got quite frank and open. And as well, the newspaper were publishing quite a lot during that period. But right now it's suppressed again, and it's considered as a public place.
Thinking of and listening to Walt Brueggemann, he talks about the powers and principalities without naming names, but you don't have to you don't have to be very sharp to figure out what who he's talking about and referring to. Is that the kind of thing that would be looked down upon?
It has been used in the history for quite a long time, that you use kind of symbolic or allegorical language almost, and you're naming your enemies, and that's still fine. There's some margin of freedom, for example, for artists and theaters and so forth, but yet that again doesn't have any impact on any concrete action. I mean, they can make some allusion to the communist, you know, not even communist party, but to the government, to the mess in the government, or to the Russians particularly, but that doesn't change anything. You know, you can hear and you're getting more and more frustrated. So, but anyway, maybe you have more questions. I would like to, which direction you would like to go or whatever, on the recent issues or whatever you would like to talk about.
I have one question. On any one given Sunday, what percentage of the population would actually attend church services?
Well, the last the last statistic I read, it was over 50%. It was 60 to 70% of people do attend. Town like Krakow, where I study and live for some time, you have a worship service since 6 o'clock in the morning, or some places in 5 o'clock in the morning, and they're running until noon every hour, and then afternoon, and the churches are full to the last point. I mean, there is no more people to enter. So, again, I'll be very careful. It doesn't mean that all those people who attend, I mean, I'm not judging who is a Christian, who not, but what I'm trying to say is that many people do attend the church for the political reasons. They do not necessarily agree with theology, or they are, you know, really convinced Christians, but the church is the only open platform whereby identifying, you say no to the government. I mean, it's on such liminal level that, again, it doesn't have any impact. In a sense, yes, because it supports the Catholic Church, needs the members to be powerful. But, yeah, that doesn't mean that all of them would classify, or they would themselves classify openly that they are Christians. They would say Catholic, yeah, because it's a part of the Polish tradition. And they would say, yeah, we believe in God and blah, blah, blah. But not necessarily understanding the doctrine and following or being active. So, by and large, I would say Poland is probably the most active, at least on the church level, nation than any other European, yeah. Even the Catholic nations like Spain or Italy. So, I'm sure that has been evoked by the very fact that there is no political freedom. There is no other way to associate or to manifest that you do not approve. And also, there is the only way to maintain some continuity within your tradition. I mean, think for a moment how important and how deeply ingrained it is in you the effect of the constitution and your early history. I mean, whole daily life, your daily life is immersed in it, even if you don't think about that, that is a part of it. So that for Poles, it is also very important to maintain that sense of continuity. For example, the Bulgarian state was able to survive both linguistically and ethnically, as an independent nation, for 500 years under severe persecution under the Turkish government, religiously different and very oppressive system, primarily because the church was active and was able to pass from generation to generation some sense of continuity and belonging to larger unit than your personal life. And so also for Poles, the church life is a very important place, that, you know, aspect of belonging to someone larger and longer than, you know, 30 years of the communist regime. So it's very important.
I've been reading lately, the last couple of months, some things coming out, the assassination attempt on the Pope a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
How this is being tied in now with the Bulgarians supposedly acting for the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if that's generally known among the Polish people, and what sort of effect does that have?
I'm sure that most of the people do know, because Free Europe, this is a radio station supported by your government, and also the BBC broadcasts in Polish daily news and presented from the Western view. I mean, it's other side. And particularly this station is very popular in Poland, and many people do hear and listen. I'm sure that, you know, we know mostly what's going on in the world, not only concerning in Poland. We know from other sources as well. Also, there is a system of, you know, you can go and read any newspaper in Poland, be it a communist from France, or be it an ultra-conservative from Germany, or someone from Switzerland, or New York Times, or whatever, Newsweek. You can read them in the embassies, or you can read them in the public libraries. But again, there's not many people who know fluently enough German, French, or English. And even if they know, there is no way to transform this information into the action. It is a quite enormous amount of energy required and organization and so forth to transform the information you receive into the action. And most of the people, they know that they cannot do anything. So for the sake of sanity, and again, some hope that it's really important for you, for example, to remember that most of Eastern European people do idolize your world. They do idolize the world of West Europe and of United States. not to say that I'm overly critical, or I hate United States, or I don't believe what the United States is doing. But it's indeed idolized picture, because they don't know too much. They didn't experience. And it's very important for them, for the very simple reason. They live in hope that there are some other people who live more free life than they do. And it's very important for example, church members going to Czechoslovakia, going to Germany or Russia, so-called intentional tourism, where you can just go and visit, just to shake a hand. You don't have to even talk to those people, but your mere presence reminds them that they are human. If anything else, because they are denied the dignity as a Christians, you know, Christianity in Poland, though so Catholic and so powerful, it always considered as a dying breed. I mean, that you always get this impression in the school. It's a leftover of the capitalistic system, and we live already in a new era. So most of the Christians do have a problem with their own identity. And it is not so vivid in Poland, but it's quite painful in some other country. You know, to be a Christian in Bulgaria and Romania, it is quite a decision. It's primarily underground church. They do have some churches to show off, you know, to the West world that, you know, it's a relative freedom. And visitation from you and some other part of the world is of incredible importance for them. Because you're coming as a full citizen of another country where the Christianity is recognized or not persecuted. And that reminds them of other world. It's very important.
How did you get permission to come to this country?
There's no problem. No.
Because I would think that they would want to, by allowing pastors to be trained and then to come back. It seems like you're promoting Christianity, and it seems to me that a communist government wouldn't want to do that.
You know, Christianity in the form of the historical tradition is fine and okay.
But yeah. Is that just in Poland, or is that most of the...
Well, this is a tendency, you know, this is the ideological tendency of Marx said the religion is opiate for the poor people. And indeed, here, that time was quite right, because it was a very established church and supporting the most powerful people and not being on the side of the poor and oppressed. Nonetheless, his picture was not a picture of the church, but of some cultural manifestation in Germany at the given time. So, from the time, the impression is, I mean, it's being made clear that the religion has been always a means of oppression. And it's a result of the feudalistic or slavery, you know, system like in Egypt or ancient Greek and Rome, and feudalistic and capitalistic system in Europe. Once we entered into a new stage of the free country or free society, where everybody will be happy and rewarded according to needs, not to input of work, then the church is unnecessary. So you always get this impression that, well, church has been, this is a part of the history, and as long as the church remains in the history, it's very fine. But if the church wants to make any criticism or any dialogue with the present, to relate the gospel to the present situation, then no, because it is already under the influence of a new age of the communistic regime, or, you know, materialistic world, or whatever, materialistic ideology. So there is always this tendency, except that in Poland, again, it's not as severe as this in other Eastern European countries. I was really shocked. I was visiting Bulgaria and talked to many, many people, and they were publicly laughing at the church. And even elderly people, where it's a tendency, natural tendency, I don't know if it's true or not, that the people are becoming more reflective and thinking about more important things. But it has been so embedded into them that they laugh at their own tradition. It's really very painful to look, you know, how people are killing their own identity. But as I'm saying, it's Bulgaria, Romania, which are very, very oppressive towards the church. So the mechanism, to explain it more clearly to you, the mechanism is very clear always. In new regime, if new regime enters and takes over the country, the first things what they do, they pass the negative criticism on the history. So entire history, Polish history, is crossed out because it was a feudal system and there was a capitalistic system. There were some good things, you know, here and there, artists or painter or author and so forth, but by and large as a economical and economical system, it is totally crossed out. So therefore the church is being identified with that system, and that's fine. But the church cannot have any dialogue with the present. And the funny thing about the communism is that the communism works very similar as Christianity. There's been a lot of analysis done about that. There's the same idea of eschatology. Christianity is the religion of future. I mean, not saying, you know, pile up in the sky, you know, you can suffer today because you'll have tomorrow better. But nonetheless, we are living under the Lordship of Christ and His return towards the present. So the communism has the very clear direction towards future, somewhere where the communism will be come to the full realization. Namely, there will be no private ownership of the means of production, and everybody will go to the shop and get whatever they want to get. There will be no even monetary system. I mean, absolutely ideal communal life, which resembles very strongly the first Christian community of the common property and so forth. Nonetheless, however, this eschatological futuristic tendency, you know, looking towards the future, that in the future will happen, has been weakened, because once the new people who came to the power, namely the member of the Communist Party, they function already as an administrative system. They don't need this prophetic vision towards the future. They're working at the present, how to control, how to run the country, how to control people, how to supply the basic needs. And this vision towards the future does not exist. Nonetheless, it is extremely important for every society to have a futuristic vision. Remember how important it is in your culture, again, so-called American dreams. You cannot live in the present without hope for the future. And so the people in this Europe, the probably one of the most painful thing, it is to live from day to day without any hope for the future. There is no future. Any society needs to have some sense of the future. It needs to have a connection with the past, but also needs to project itself into the future.